Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenhoff. We are coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Join the show wherever you're listening in La Crosse, on the Eagle, on WISS in Oshkosh, WGBW Green Bay. You can always call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon is in the process of ruining. A little bit later on this hour, we're going to be talking to Deb Kronmiller from the League of Women Voters, and we're going to be talking about those two referendum that are going to be on next Tuesday's ballot, because the election is a week from today.
Oh,
the primary is April 2nd, so make sure you're registered to vote. You can check. Go to myvotewi.gov. It's a really handy website. It will show you everything that's going to be on your ballot. Take a look at it and stick around for that conversation with Deborah Kronmiller coming up later this hour to kick that around. We had Todd Alba was just here for the last half hour, and we were talking about this group of Democratic lawmakers in Wisconsin who are now essentially asking people to protest vote against President Biden because of what's happening between Israel and Gaza. And you said, Greg, you wanted to clarify something.
I just want everyone to know that my, you know, I don't want to show off some sort of allegiance to the president. I believe in him. I think he's doing a great job. I think the numbers show that the policies he's put forth and have passed are doing the good work. But I also don't want anyone to think that, you know, as far as the conflicts overseas, I am for safe, secure for both, freedom for both, and not having to worry about being terrorized by both. And that is probably a very vague statement, and you could probably come at me for many things, but and I'll clarify it offline, but I'm not going to get into it right now because we don't have the time. But I have a very strong opinion when it comes to Palestine, as far as, because I have many Palestinian friends.
Sure.
And even here, they're scared. So
it's a mess. It is. It's a horrifying tragedy in so many different ways for all the sides involved.
Yeah.
But again, doing this kind of protest vote is not helping. And Donald Trump, trust me, would not deal with the Palestinians with a more gentle hand than President Biden is attempting to do. He wouldn't.
And I think you brought up a very good point, too, is when they see, when the GOP sees groups divided, they're going to say, look, they can't even agree on this. We need to do X, Y, and Z because they're not doing A, B, and C because they don't care about freedom, America, and they'll go on forever and talk about
it.
But I think it's also, you need to stand as a united front. And then when it's done, let's go back to the table and talk some more.
Mark from Prairie du Sac, Biden has repeatedly called upon Benjamin Netanyahu to change his Gaza policy and continues to supply humanitarian aid to the Palestinian people. And he's right. Jack from Merrimack, as far as I know, further aid for Israel has not been approved of as of this time. Secondly, Biden has sent his highest level diplomats to try and negotiate a ceasefire, has set up that humanitarian port in Gaza. And finally, Netanyahu is a Trump style near dictator and not under any kind of American control. And you're absolutely right, Jack.
Yeah.
Bibi's going to do what he wants to. Bibi isn't even doing what the Israelis want.
To what Jack said, and I'm reading this verbatim from the Cap Times just to say, you know, what's going on as far as aid is happening. The federal government funding package passed the U.S. Congress passed over the weekend a $3.8 billion package in aid for Israel and halts funding for the U.N. Agency for Palestinian Refugees until March of next year. Now, that's not Biden. That's the Congress, because they want to punish Palestine because they just love Israel so much. But that's what's happening so far.
Well, we are going to move along, and we just wanted to get those comments. And you can always check in with us at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Going to lighten things up a little bit.
A little bit. Just
a little bit.
A skosh.
Our neighbor to the north, Minnesota, they were talking about legislation requiring safe storage for firearms. This is something that we've talked about on the show before. Other gun safety measures.
Yes. We've run ads for it.
We have run ads for it. Minnesota State Senator Warren Limmer.
Who looks exactly what you think he looks like.
Warren Limmer takes issue with safe storage requirements for firearms for a really interesting reason.
We know why. He said it himself.
Do we have that clip, Calvin? Let's take a listen.
Also, there's another segment of our population that often requires guns in their occupation. I'm talking about rural farm people that are living out in rural areas. They not only have to have concerns about predation, but they also have concerns about their own domestic farm animals.
Why?
Farm animals at times can be very dangerous. Take, for example, a cow who just recently had a calf. You even walk too close to a cow and it'll take you down and trample you into dust. And many farmers have a readily available gun just for those emergencies. Fumbling around with a lock while a cow or a bull or any other animal is going after your daughter or your son, you can't fumble around with a key or try and find the lockbox or put your thumb on a biometric key of some sort in your home while the danger is outside. This bill puts those individuals in even more danger.
Minnesota State Senator Warren Limmer, a Republican from Maple Grove, concerned about cow attacks. I'm not a farm kid.
Yeah.
I don't have any experience with cows. They're big animals. I'm sure they can hurt you. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But if a farmer is going out to the pasture to check on the animals, wouldn't you already have your firearm with you? And therefore, this is not a storage issue.
Jane, you're being foolish right now.
Am I?
You're being foolish.
Do I just not understand?
You don't understand the mind of the rural liver, the farmer, who at any moment could deal with a child, a son or daughter, being trampled to dust by an angry, angry cow.
When cows attack.
When
cows attack, it's a new television reality show. Again, maybe I'm wrong. Let me know. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Is this a big concern if you live in a rural area about run-ins with wayward cows?
Dear rural listeners out there, have you ever been chased after by a cow?
And I bet there have been. I bet there have been.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. To me, like a cow trampling at you, a gun, like one shot from a gun, I don't know if it's going to save you. It's a cow. It weighs a lot. That bullet's probably going to get stuck real, real, real surfacey in the system. But the other thing too, you know, we're having fun and that's fine. The reason why we talk about safe gun storage is it's one way to help deal with mental illness and people committing suicide, which happens
kids.
All the kids.
Kids.
Like, so him getting up and saying a farmer needs to be able to get a gun and be unimpeded because their son or their daughter, I think, is a disingenuous statement when the fact is no one's trying to take away your rights or your access. They're just making it a little safer in your home from, or they're helping. But then again, as soon as I say that, I know there's going to be some dude over my shoulder going, I don't need the government helping me make things safe. That's my job.
We're not doing a very good job overall.
No.
We're not. Yeah. I just saw a story this morning. A woman accidentally shot and killed her 13-year-old daughter trying to get her keys out of her purse where she had her handgun that was not locked. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Don from Milwaukee is on the line. Good morning, Don. Thanks for joining us. What did you want to say?
Good morning, Jane. I'd like to make a quick comment on that clip that you had, that Republican from Minnesota. I grew up on a farm, lived on a farm many many years, they don't use bulls anymore. They use what they call artificial insemination to get the cows pregnant. So you don't have to be worried about bulls anymore. And a cow, when they have a calf, they get nervous and they're anxious like any mother would be. But we've had many cows have calves, and they never trampled anybody to death. But I just want to make that quick comment. I enjoy your show. And by the way, I have another question to ask you. I got my ballot, and I got a couple referendums on there, and those darn things are tricky. Are you ever going to discuss that?
You hit the right day, Don, because, yes, we have Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters is coming up after the 11:30 news, and we're going to talk about those two referendum and what it means and who is behind this and what these referendum would do. So stick around for that. Deborah Cronmiller going to be joining us from the League of Women Voters in just a little bit. Trampled to dust by a cow. And if you've had this experience, please, I'm a city kid. 855-75-CIVIC. Maybe this happens more frequently than we know, Greg, and it's just being held down by the farm lobby or
something. We're not hearing about like bridges. I don't hear about bridge tragedies. I'm not hearing about cow trampling tragedies. What do we do? We need to get the celebrities together, and we need to have ourselves a telethon. Save the children from what?
Cows.
Trampling by cow.
Save the kids from the cows. Okay. If you want to join this conversation,
please join it.
855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. We'll be right back. Cows in the news. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Music to soothe an angry cow. Welcome back to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join the show. Call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. We have been talking about Minnesota State Senator Warren Limmer, a Republican from Maple Grove, arguing against a proposal for safe storage requirements for firearms because of concerns about wayward cows and people getting trampled to dust by angry cows when they go out to check on their animals. If you have previous experience with cows, 855-75-CIVIC, would love to hear your take on this.
If you've lost someone in a cow trampling accident, please call the law offices of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Charles from Green Bay is on the line. Good morning, Charles. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I remember this is back in the late 60s, early 70s, whenever you went out into the cow pen or in that area, before you walked out the door, there was a Louisville Slugger bat there.
Really?
Okay, and you kept, oh yeah. Mother cows and calves are like a bear and
very,
her cubs.
Very protective, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And they should be. Why not?
Well, yeah.
I mean, they're their offspring. But the thing is, the other idea is the ones that you really have to worry about is when you go into the bullpen, they don't care. They'll chase you down. And the cute story that I have, the farmer that I helped work on, when I was in high school, he had a bull, and he said the one time the bull decided to charge him and try to pin him, and he had a 3-pound sledgehammer, and he hit the bull directly between the eyeballs and knocked him out.
Wow. Oh, I'm not saying, Charles, we're not saying that you know, these animals aren't dangerous. Certainly, I have great respect for farmers and people who work with livestock, because they can be unpredictable and do crazy things. It's just his entire argument, this senator from Minnesota, his entire argument against safe storage requirements is that a farmer is not going to be able to get to his weapon in time if his child is being trampled to dust by a cow. It seems like a reach. Charles, are you there?
It's too many. I'm here. It's too many people writing, you know, bills for, you know, it's like I'm going to complain about the Washington Redskins thing, and I'm the only one, and so everybody's got to do it.
Thank you so much for listening, Charles. Thank you so very much for calling. Really appreciate it. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Susan is joining us from her car. Good morning, Susan. How are you?
Drive carefully.
I'm good. Oh, I am. I happened to look it up while I was at a stop sign. There are about 20 fatalities from bulls or cows hurting someone every year, and those are usually, half of them are from the bulls, as previous caller mentioned, but the other half are people like jogging through their pasture, or bicyclists, or somebody, you know, just kind of incidental. It's not a huge thing, but I think this just harkens back to the fact that people are just really afraid to have a way to put their weapons there, and these are weapons. These guns are not. These are weapons, and they need to be put in a safe spot. And I had a family tragedy. Had the weapon been placed in a safe spot, it never would. Somebody wouldn't have died. And I really feel as though people get all their hair on fire over stuff that has nothing to do with them directly, but just to how to make our world a better and a safer place to live.
Thank you.
So that's my only comment.
So sorry for your loss. Yeah. First of all, Susan, really, that's just tragic. I'm so sorry to hear that. And thank you very much for checking in with us.
And that's one thing I really despise when politicians do that, when they don't just say, hey, I don't want to I don't like gun control. I don't like gun legislation. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull a random group of people, farmers, out of the air, and I'm going to attach to them a statistic or a claim that is not backed by any sort of science, because as our caller Susan just said, this is not an epidemic running wild through the country. But I'm going to use them as because farmers, we got to love farmers, and we got to save our children. You don't want your son or daughter trampled to dust. And meanwhile, there's no reason to be saying any of these things. You can just say, be honest, I don't like gun control. I like my guns. I don't need a safe or a box or a key or the fact that he said biometric thumbprint was funny, but
you're right. I mean, he's coming up with an argument to hide his real intention, which is keep your hands off my guns.
Yeah.
And again, we've talked about this on our show before. Nobody wants to take your guns. I don't want to take your guns. We just want a few more safety regulations, a few more safety measures.
I would
think most responsible gun owners, at least from polls that I've seen, they agree with red flag laws. They agree with universal background checks.
Yeah.
And I would think that most of them already do safely store their weapons.
I would hope so. We got a couple of texts. Jack from Merrimack says that fear of a child being attacked by a cow sounds like bull to me.
But I'm bumped.
Boom. Meanwhile, how many children have been killed by guns not stored safely, and how many have been saved by easy access to a gun? Very interesting question.
Yes.
Then Mark from the SAC coming back for us. Good grief. I just don't know where to go with something to counter such an idiotic concept. That nitwit from hold it back, Mark. That nitwit from Minnesota is arguing, what the heck does that have to do with safe gun storage? If you shoot a cow, it may just collapse on someone.
There's that too.
Yeah.
Tim from Eau Claire on the line. Tim, we got just a couple of minutes left. Thank you for joining us. What did you want to say?
Okay, about this cow thing, I think the man who's got that thing going against, you know, guns for the cows killing people, I think he's insulting farmers' intelligence, because all the people that I know that farm that have cows, when they have a calf, they isolate the mother and the little one so people aren't around them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you so much, yeah, Tim. You make exactly an excellent, excellent point.
The cows are sitting there. I mean, cows. The poor cows in this situation.
I know, right?
Too. But the farmers, it's like when people say daylight savings time is for farmers, the farmers are like, no, it's not.
Leave me out of this
argument.
I'm
not your example. We've accomplished something today, Jane.
When cows go rogue.
Which we found out from
Susan.
That they don't.
Well, 20 a year. Don't go running through a pasture.
Arm the runners. We gotta get runners with guns.
Don't go running through pastures where you don't belong. How about start there?
Yeah.
All right. News is coming up next. And then when we return, very excited to have her join us. Deborah Cronmiller is with the League of Women Voters. And we're going to talk about the two referendum that are going to be on the ballot next Tuesday. Stay here. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm a cow. I'm a cow. I'm a cow, I go moo. I'm a cow, 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 got beef, got steak, got cheese, got gray egg, not lean, got me A1 sauce, please. These heifers got nothing on me.
First they said we couldn't dance, then said we couldn't drink, and unless a man allowed it, they said we couldn't think.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. So very happy to have you along with us. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the show if you want to call or send in a text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Very excited to have our next guest join us. We've had a lot of questions about this. And as a matter of fact, Deborah, we just had a caller ask when we were going to talk about these two referendum that are going to be on next Tuesday's ballot. So delighted to welcome Deborah Cronmiller. She is the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining us, Deborah.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Well, let's talk about these two referendum. And we have talked about them a little bit before with other guests. It's my contention that these are intentionally written as murky as humanly possible to confuse people so they don't know what it actually means. So I'm going to just read this first referendum, and then we'll pick that apart a little bit if that's okay. Number one, the use of private funds in election administration. Shall Section 7(1) of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that private donations and grants may not be applied for, accepted, expended, or used in connection with the conduct of any primary election or referendum. So this, I'm assuming, is referring to some outside money that came in to help administer the elections in 2020 when we were in the midst of the COVID pandemic.
Correct. I think it is a response to that. I think it's also kind of circled into some of the what we know to be misinformation about how this money was used in 2020. You know, we were in a new and very different place in 2020 with the pandemic.
Yep.
And we had the consolidation of many polling places. We had, a lot of different needs that clerks had never had before. You know, they had to have a lot of protective equipment for that election. They had to have sanitizer, plexiglass shields, that sort of thing. We know when they, in some areas where they actually reduced the number of polling places, they needed more equipment in those polling places so that they could mitigate the number or the length of the lines so the voting experience wouldn't be a horrible one. Yet in Milwaukee, we saw lines that went around the block, you know, and it was just horrible. The monies that came from the Center for Civic and Tech Life were they're grants that are made to municipalities, and they have terms. And the terms are that you can only use their grant dollars for nonpartisan purposes. So things like the administration of the election, they could buy equipment, they could pay poll workers, they could get all that PPE that those polling places needed. What they could not do with the money by contract was use it for any partisan purpose. So there was no way they could have, a municipality could have tried to turn out voters of a certain party. So there was no partisanship in these dollars. And I think that the some of the misinformation that we're hearing is that because larger grants went to Milwaukee and Madison, communities that have self-selected to be a little bit more liberal, that clearly this was some way to turn out the Democratic vote. When in fact, 200 municipalities in the state of Wisconsin accepted grant dollars, some in the most conservative areas of our state. And our clerks took those dollars because they needed them to administer their election. It was not about political motivation. And so I think we need to separate the truth from the falsehoods and really make sure that people understand that one, elections cost money. Two, there's not enough state and federal money to go around to cover the cost of these elections. Outside money has been a part of election administration for years, even long before 2020. And without this money, or without a guaranteed source of other monies, taxpayers are going to cover this cost. And I think none of us want our tax bills to go up.
Or we're just going to have much longer waits and much longer wait times, right? And the whole voting process is going to become more of a pain in the neck. And I think, as you said, Deborah, there is this misinformation that this money only went to Milwaukee and Dane counties. And I don't know, as you said, there are very specific requirements as to how this money can be used. So it's not like they're giving these dollars to the election commission and then they're printing up flyers on behalf of one candidate or another. That's not what the money goes for. It's, as you said, it was for PPE. People forget. Remember where we were 3 years ago at this time. We were standing 6 feet apart. We couldn't find toilet paper in the stores. As you said, Deborah, election clerks were dealing with a situation they had never dealt with before. And I had no idea that outside money has always been involved to some extent in running our elections, because there's so much attention on, Mark Zuckerberg. It's all Mark Zuckerberg's fault. And no, but that's not true.
Municipalities accept outside money to do lots of things, to support their libraries, to do their forestry work, to, you know, and elections dollars, when they're available, municipalities can apply for those as well. Kind of creating a wholesale, no, you can't accept any money for this one purpose of government. It seems, you know, targeted and wrong. It just seems wrong. We do not need this to be in our Constitution. The legislature had an opportunity to put said language into law, and that probably is exactly the right place where it should be, is in statute, if they want it to be there. The governor vetoed that bill. And, you know, there's a League of Women Voters, you know, an organization that's, you know, been advocating for good government, transparent government for 104 years now. This looks to us like a trying to usurp the executive branch's authority and take it onto the legislature. You know, the legislature had its chance to do this through regular lawmaking processes. It failed. They did not have the votes to override the governor's veto. And now they're trying something else. And that something else is putting this in the form of a constitutional amendment in front of the voters, which if you listen to some people who are advocating a yes vote on this particular amendment, they're saying that's where it should be. The voters should decide. Well, that's not good government. We have processes for putting these sort of policies into law. Those processes didn't work because our lawmakers couldn't agree. And that's that doesn't mean you change the process. That means you don't get the law.
Well, and it's essentially, well, we didn't get what we wanted through the regular channels, so we're going to invent a new way to get what we want anyway, and put this as a referendum that is poorly worded to confuse people.
It seems like an emergency break glass almost situation.
If you're just joining us, Deborah Kronmiller is our guest. She's the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, and we're talking about the two referendum that will be appearing on your ballot statewide next Tuesday on April 2nd when we head to the polls for the primary. It almost seems, Deborah, that some people want to make voting much more difficult.
Yeah, we think that this could potentially have that ramification if enacted, which is why we're asking for a no vote. You know, if voters do have to wait longer, if there's less, you know, up-to-date equipment or fewer, you know, the second question of all of this, you know, fewer people involved in the mix to help support our valuable clerks, you know, what does that do to the voters? What does that do to their voting experience? And when voting experience starts becoming less and less a positive one, do folks stay home? And that's the sort of you know, advocacy that the League has been doing for many, many years. We want everyone to have access to the ballot. It needs to be as simple as possible. It needs to be, you know, the least number of barriers to ensuring that your vote is going to count. And this just looks like we're standing up some additional hoops to jump through and making it harder for our clerks. You know, we all know through all the polling evidence, people like their clerks. They trust their clerks. Our clerks are our neighbors. Our poll workers are our friends. Yep. We know that the elections in Wisconsin have strong integrity. And by putting in some of these not necessary constraints on our elections, you know, do we break down some of that?
We're talking to Deborah Kronmiller, who is the executive director from the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. We've talked about this many times, Deborah, about we should be embarrassed as a country and as a state on how low our voter turnout is. That must make you crazy when you see like 66%. I guess it's better than 46%, but the goal is to get people out. And this election is going to be more important than any in our history.
Yeah.
Seriously, we cannot encourage enough people to get out and vote.
Correct. Every election is important, especially spring elections. Spring elections have on the ballot our judicial races, our municipal races, the school board races, your local referendum question. And these are the things that impact your life every single day.
Directly.
Yes.
Who sits on your city council? Who sits on your county boards? These are the folks who are deciding everything that happens in your locality. And, you know, every voter should feel compelled to come out and say, this is the county board member I want. This is the city council member I want. This is the mayor candidate that shares my values. I want to make sure that person is running my city. These are the really rubber meets the roads elections. And it's always been a confusion to me and all the League members why we don't come out for them. You know, this is the big time. You know, presidential elections happen every 4 years. A lot of stuff gets done at the federal level, as we all know. But what really impacts our lives every single day is what happens at the local level.
Absolutely.
That's yes. Such an excellent point, Deborah. It really is. These are even more important than the presidential election, just in terms of what this means for your day-to-day life and what it means directly in your community as opposed to across the entire country. So, yes. Get out and vote on Tuesday. It's really, really important. Yeah. Do you have time to say for a second segment? Because I don't know that we'll be able to cover this whole thing. I'll set up the question before we go to break. This is the second referendum question that will be on next Tuesday's ballot. Election officials, shall Section 7-2 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums. Now, when I read this, it makes it sound like I can pull Bill in from off the street and have him give advice. That's not accurate.
No. We're all kind of confused what this actually is. In the statutes that currently exist, election officials are defined very clearly. What we're fearful of is that by codifying that, you know, statutory language in the Constitution, we create opportunities for confusion. And that confusion might end up being litigated in courtrooms across Wisconsin as to whether or not, you know, the League of Women Voters, who published a voter's guide that printed some information about what candidates are on your ballot and how to find a sample ballot, we're not defined in the statutes. Was that now a prohibited activity?
So they could.
We just don't know answers to questions like that.
So there could be litigation then, yeah, if someone wants to come after
absolutely
the League of Women Voters. Yeah, this seems like a bad idea. We're going to continue this conversation. If you have a question for Deborah Kronmiller, please feel free to call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
They said we couldn't vote. We cried out, finally it came about, ratified by Tennessee, we won at last. And the first bite of that apple, I guess, revealed the truth. That's when Eve got smart, and that's why Adam don't like fruit. But that old tree of knowledge had some limbs that broke. We had to fight for women's rights, we won the right to vote. They thought we were a joke, they tried to dash our hopes. With every word they spoke, they tried to revoke a woman's right to vote.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us, call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. So glad to have our guest with us. She is the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Deborah Kronmiller is here to kind of break down the two referendum that are going to be appearing on next Tuesday's ballot when you head to the polls on April 2nd. The second question, again, Deborah, we'll recap a little bit. Election officials, they will make a special article in the Constitution that only election officials designated by law can perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums. And as we were saying before the break, this kind of sets it up for even organizations like yours to be in the crosshairs of someone if they determine that you are not an election official.
That's correct. And because it's so vaguely written, it's difficult to, you know, ascertain whether or not all of the different supportive players to our elections and our election officials would be allowed if this were enacted. And so the you know, what we know is the League's involved with poll worker recruitment, as are other organizations. The League's involved with getting people to the polls, offering rides through our collaboration with Lyft. And Vote Riders does this same work in municipalities around the nation. These are not actions or activities that are defined in statutes and would not be codified in the Constitution were this to pass. So now the question becomes, if it's not in there, does that make it not allowable? And that we're concerned about that. And we're concerned because our clerks have always accepted support. You know, if the machine that is in the polling place on election day, you know, fails to accept the ballot, you know, something's wrong with it, they call in a technician from the company. That person's not defined as an official election worker.
Sure.
Are they allowed to come into the polling place then? Are they allowed to fix that machine? There's just too many questions here. And I think with all those outstanding questions, we have no choice but to vote no.
And once again, it just feels like there is a certain group of people who want to make it as difficult and uncomfortable and as murky as humanly possible. And that doesn't seem... that doesn't seem very pro-democracy, at least to me.
We agree. And the but the reality is, I think what we also agree on is, you know, clerks are so important to everyone in a community. You know, they help really make sure that our elections are safe, secure, accountable. You know, they certify results. They send their results to the counties to be certified. They send it to WEC to be certified. Everything has a paper trail. We know it all works. It's like we're fixing a problem we don't have. And I always am concerned about why we do that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I said to Jane earlier was, when the group of people who are doing this get their way, they make it harder for the people even who vote for them. They make it harder for everybody. This doesn't just affect one group of people.
You're absolutely right.
This affects the entire electorate, and there are going to be plenty of people who are going to say, I was going to vote for so-and-so, but I'm not going in today because I just
don't. I don't want to wait 3 hours.
I got to wait 3 hours. I got to do that. Like, no, and they're going to, I mean, it's not advantageous. And as you said earlier, if the law couldn't make it happen, don't put it in the Constitution, because this could also backfire on the group who put it forth one day as well. I mean, this, it's, as usual, not very well thought out.
Mm-hmm. And amending our Constitution is a big deal.
Yes.
You know, we've had a Constitution in place for over 150 years. We've amended it 148 times. And most of those amendments, or half of them basically, were to undo a prior amendment because it wasn't well thought out. It was perhaps a policy or a social issue that never had a place in the Constitution to begin with. And that's what we think about these two questions and this constitutional amendment. It does not belong in our Constitution. It's a policy. It's about how to administer our elections. This can be done at the election administration level through the Wisconsin Election Commission. It can be done through legislation. Certainly does not need to be done through constitutional amendment.
Well, and yet again, I go back to yet another example of one group not being able to get something done going through the correct channels. So they come up with a different way to go around it, mm-hmm. to see if they can get their way that way. And with the yep. language that's used in these referendum, it's intentionally murky. It's confusing. The issue, at least from me, from my perspective, I'm going to vote no on both of them.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's what we're advocating. And you, the electorate should be aware that this is actually a more complicated situation than it appears on its face. Not that it's not complicated enough. But the questions that are on our ballot and what should happen in the Constitution, the language change in the Constitution is actually different than the language change that we're seeing on our ballot. And for all of these reasons, it's not transparent. It doesn't seem, or it doesn't feel good. And, you know, I think we've discussed the motivations for it certainly are to make voting more accessible.
No.
I think the motivations are to suppress certain individuals from voting, mm-hmm. or worse, create some sort of false narrative around the integrity of our elections, which we know are of very high integrity.
If you would like to find out more, Deborah, if someone is listening and that they'd like to learn more about the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, where can they get in touch with you?
Sure. You can always find more information about us on our website, which is lwvwi.org. We actually have a toolkit on why to vote no. You'll find that in our section on our navigation bar, toolkits and resources. And the toolkit is a vote no toolkit.
We will get that in our show notes once we put the podcast up afterwards. Deborah Cronmiller, the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, thank you so very much for your time. This has been really, really informative.
Thank you so much.
Stay close. We have news coming up next. Thank you to Greg and Calvin. Without you, nothing works. Thank you most of all to everyone for calling and texting and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.